Bellevue Public School District. Ms. Lust, good morning to you.
I am Chanel Lust, and I am representing the Bellevue Public School District. We would, Mr. North, and I would like to split our oral argument time. I would like 7 minutes for the school district. Mr. North would like 3, and I'd like to reserve 2 of the 7 minutes I have for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. You may.
This case is about a 33-year-old teacher, Bradley Nord, who had a lawful sexual relationship with a 16-year-old student, E.D., while employed as a teacher at Bellevue Public Schools. When she was 21 years old, E.D. sued Bellevue Public Schools and Nord, now alleging that sexual relationship was unwanted and predatory. The complaint has no allegations indicating that at the time of the relationship that Bellevue Public Schools knew of the sexual relationship, or that E.D. reported that relationship to anybody at the school, or that anybody at the school happened upon the relationship. Instead, in regards to Bellevue Public Schools, the allegation contains 12 allegations of negligence against Bellevue Public Schools that are really just 12 iterations of a negligent supervision and negligent hiring claim. In other words, they're all related to the fact that Bradley Nord was a teacher at our school and that the school district did not have adequate policies for supervising.
Does a teacher's aid program different than the rest of the school curriculum? Are there different rules?
It is a different program, but that's just like saying, gym class is a different part of the curriculum.
Are teachers,
it was a special, like, after school.
Are teachers
really
allowed to? Are teachers allowed to have communication with students using their own personal devices and regular school curriculum?
That's how it is alleged, and we have to accept that as true. The complaint alleges that Mr. Nord was allowed to have text message exchanges with E.D. as part of the teacher's aid program.
Is that typical in the normal curriculum? Would a teacher be allowed to have communications with a student about their math grade or their English grade? Would that be encouraged or allowed?
I can't answer that question for you, mostly because of where we are procedurally, where we just I know that is not allowed. Further, though, when you look at the teacher's aid program and you look at what that is, it still is related to Mr. Nord's employment with the school district. And our position, then, is that the school is immune from this lawsuit under Section 13.9.10.7 under the intentional tort exception to liability under the Political Subdivision Tort Claims Act.
District court ruled that the school district was not immune. Is that correct?
The district court ruled that in regards to just the in regards to respondeat superior, that the school was immune. But beyond that, the district court did not look at the separate allegations of negligence and see if those allegations of negligence were hiring or supervision. And under the case law in this state, if because of the employment relationship, the allegations are nothing more than failure to adequately screen or a negligent hiring claim or a negligent supervision claim, the court has consistently said that in that situation, the school continues to be immune. And when you look at those 12 allegations of negligence, there are none of them that are separate and apart from the employment relationship. We should have had policies for example, one of the allegations is we should not have had the ability to lock classroom doors at the school.
Is this one cause of action?
It is all pled as negligent cause of action, but there are 12 different allegations of negligence.
Thank you.
And our position is that there's no such thing in the law as negligent sex. This was an intentional act between these two parties to have sex together. That constitutes a battery claim. And therefore, without that battery claim and the employment relationship with Bellevue Public Schools, there is no claim against the school district. And the court has consistently held this way. For example, in Britton versus the City of Crawford, in that case, police officers shot a juvenile. The juvenile's mother brought a claim against the City of Crawford, alleging such allegations of negligence as failing to follow procedures for barricaded suspects, failure to engage in negotiation, failure to try to get family and friends involved in the barricaded situation, and employing high-risk tactics. In that case, this court said all of those claims are related to the employment of the police officer by the City of Crawford, and the fact that that employee shot the student was a battery, and in that case, all of those allegations of negligence flowed from that, and the city was immune from that. Same thing in
Council, before you go on further, is this a final appealable order?
Yes, it is.
Why?
Under the collateral or order doctrine, we are claiming governmental immunity.
What have we said about the collateral order doctrine recently?
Well, I think it's in, first of all, this issue was brought up initially and dismissed. We moved for rehearing, and
Before the Court of Appeals.
Before the Court of Appeals, this is granted. Secondly, you're
in the Supreme Court now.
I get that.
All right. So why don't you talk about what you think our recent jurisprudence says or does with respect to the collateral order?
I think the jurisprudence that is on point, for example, is, I can't remember the name of the case right now, but an Indian tribe was claiming sovereign immunity. That was denied at the district court level on appeal. The court said that under the collateral order doctrine, because they were claiming direct governmental immunity, it was immediately available.
What do you think the significance of our opinion in Heckman is?
I'm sorry, I can't address that directly. And I am running out of time for Mr. Coley.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Colhane, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. The complaint in this case alleges that Mr. Nord, my client, negligently failed to follow certain established by the school district to prevent consensual sexual relations between a teacher and a student. We believe that he's bad in the Division IV Claims Act. That act is intended, according to 13908, to make employees and subdivisions, political subdivisions, liable to the same extent as a private individual would be under certain circumstances.
Mr. Colhane, would you like to take a stab at our final order questions?
Well, yes. I thought that would come up, actually, during today's argument. And, I know what the case you're talking about, obviously, is the one where the attorney was taken off the case and appealed immediately under the collateral source doctrine.
Are you familiar with Heckman and the significance of it as to this case, if any?
Well, I think the one I'm familiar with was one last year that had to do with the attorney who was thrown off the case and then tried to appeal.
Is that
Heckman?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't remember the name of it.
Okay.
I think that clearly that's an issue here. I wonder if maybe it doesn't make a difference, though, whether this is an immunity issue, one created by statute, as opposed to a situation where we were in Heckman.
Where is the statute that you would point to as the source of appeal from something that is clearly not a final judgment.
But not source of appeal, I mean the immunity. Of course, the,
right.
the jurisprudence, at least in the federal area, when they talk about immunity, the reason they allow it to be appealed immediately is because of the ramifications of not appealing. And they say that one of the benefits that you get from the immunity created by statute in the federal arena, and I think in the state arena too, is the freedom from the vexatious litigation that should not even be proceeding because there is immunity.
The federal case law all relies on collateral order doctrine, right?
Essentially, yes.
And that was the analysis, or similar analysis, that we used in that Stone Visions versus Omaha Tribe case. But I think what we're all trying to get at is, does this court's opinion in Heckman have implications for our prior jurisprudence with respect to collateral order?
Well, I guess all I can say in response to that is it clearly has, as it relates to that particular situation that you're dealing with, where an attorney is not allowed to proceed with the case. I think each of these collateral order issues have to be looked at separately, and I think the issues at stake in an immunity situation like we have here are much broader and much more important than the situation you were dealing with there. And I know the parties in that case probably wouldn't agree with that. But if you look, I mean, the purpose of the immunity statute, the immunity created, preserved by the Political Subdivision Tort Claims Act, is to keep political subdivisions from being subjected to this type of litigation when they are, by statute, immune from it. And if they can't raise that until after the litigation is over, a good share of what the statute is intended to prevent is lost. So that would be my response to that.
Before you sit down, is there another appellate path? Anything other than collateral order? Can you point us to another possible path?
I cannot, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lathrop, good morning to you.
Your Honor. May it please the Court, thank you for your time here this morning. My name is Matt Lathrop. I'm appearing on behalf of E.D. In her claim against the Bellevue Public Schools.
Before we get too far, does E.D. concede that immunity would be granted, it should be granted to Nord?
She does. There's just no way we can replead this to make this a negligent act, so he's under the statute. He is, for his actions.
So really and, focusing on Bellevue at this
and,
point.
Right. And to the extent there's respondeat superior liability for Nord's actions directed to the school district, I think we have to concede that as well.
Well, didn't the district court dismiss that cause of action? That's out.
Right.
Nord's out. Now really it's the school district and immunity.
That's exactly right.
And the district court overruled the motion to dismiss based on the pleading, saying that it was non-immune.
Correct, because in the, I believe, the first opinion by Judge Thompson, and then echoed by Judge Martinez, the court stated that ED had alleged additional and separate causes of negligence or negligent acts by the school district, which amounted to negligence independent of Nord's actions, and those are the claims that we wanted.
Are there many causes of action here, or just many theories of recovery, or how would you organize this?
I'll say two things, because I thought I might get that question. I think there are two classes of duty. The first class of duty that I think is important is that the school district has a duty generally to protect the students. And I'm gonna ask the court, when I worked here, Jeff Grant always used to say, don't say if you read the something, say when you read something. When you read the restatement third, section 40 talks about special relationships that exist and the duties that arise out of those. Section 40 in the comments in G talk about a school has a special duty to its students. So there's class A, Judge, a claim that we make. Not a theory of recovery, but a claim. The second claim that we make is a second class of duty, which is the school district has a duty to develop extracurricular programs in a manner that is as safe as possible for the participants. If we look at a soccer program, the school district has to put in place policies and procedures which make soccer safe for the students, or football, or gymnastics. They need padding and a proper and adjusted and inspected equipment. This is an extracurricular activity, and this extracurricular activity allows students, first of all, the students choose which teachers they, they're allowed to be paired with, and that subjects students to the risk of grooming by a teacher, which I allege. I'm going to groom a student who seems vulnerable, develop an emotional relationship, and then encourage that student to go sign up for the student aid program so that we can further our relationship. There's our
So is your argument that the extracurricular business is somehow different than normal classroom work?
It is. It is, Your Honor. This teacher's aid program is not a graded program. It is not...
So it doesn't come under the tort claims?
No, 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 Your Honor. I'm sorry. It's a school activity, but it's an extracurricular activity, and I think we recognize that if a public school is providing a football program, that would be considered something that falls within the Tort Claims Act. I'm simply saying that this is a... It's an extracurricular rather than accredited, graded program.
Could you address the collateral order doctrine and the appealability of the order that's before us?
It is my strong position that allowing this collateral appeal here creates all of the problems that we have right now in the record, among which are my allegation that no discovery was allowed to find out if they have insurance. I understand the argument that the defendant makes. We lose the right of litigation. But that is a right that can certainly be protected after discovery when a certain amount of facts are developed and collected. And if no evidence of school, in this case, the governmental agency, the school's activities are outside of the protection of the Tort Claims Act, then I think that's the place where you have the summary judgment and the judge can make a decision on all the facts.
Did anyone ask the trial judge to certify the order that's being attempted to be appealed under Section 25.13.15.
Correct, and that's the judge has to say, I find this is a final appealable order. No, no one ever did not do that, Your Honor. And there's no...
And the court didn't do it on itself.
That's correct. The court, I won, so we were. I was expecting to have an answer filed and said we had the appeal. There was no certification.
Could this immunity issue be raised at a later time?
Yes, absolutely. And without, I don't think without significant impairment of the school district's right under the statute to immunity.
Is there an issue of law of the case that would prohibit that later?
Later.
Well, no, the district court overruled the motion dismissed, and there was a motion for summary judgment that raised it again. Would the law of the case already be decided on the motion for dismissal?
If I'm understanding your question, so we have the exact same scenario as here. The judge, I get the same order, and then in summary judgment, the school district moves for
summary judgment
and the court affirms it. I would say no, because I think it's very easy for a court in a initial summary judgment without an answer being filed or a discovery, for the court to say at this time there is there's not adequate evidence of the defendant's qualification for immunity.
You mean in an initial order on motion to dismiss?
Right, in this case right here. That
based on the pleadings.
Based on the pleadings, correct.
You said motion for summary judgment.
Oh,
that's
I'm sorry.
I wanted to be
my
sure.
My mouth's running way faster than my brain.
All right, thank you.
I apologize. I come back to the the general duty that schools have to students. They stand in the place of parents. We've recognized that. Parents give up their right to protect their students, and the school district then has a duty to develop these programs to protect from foreseeable harm. And the only foreseeable harm in this case, in this program, Teachers Aid, is not emotional or sexual relationship developing between students. There can be all kinds of illegal activity. There can be underage drinking.
Address, if you could, more directly.
Yes.
The argument, I believe, that the other side is making, that you're just trying to do an end run around the intentional tort exclusion under the political.
Sure. If I were just saying that the school district didn't watch Bradley Nord close enough, I think that all I'm saying is the school district had a duty to keep him from acting intentionally. But that's not all I said. What I had said in addition to that is, we're allowing locked classrooms, closed doors when students are still in the building, and there's no threat to the students. I think that that's a policy or procedure that lends itself to inappropriate contact between students and teachers, not just sexual, but all kinds of criminal activity, drug activity, underage drinking. I'm not making an end run around it because we're looking at the behavior of Nord when we talk about the sexual relationship, but I'm looking at the school district and the policies and procedures that I allege they lacked that create a safe environment for students to attend school. I've alleged that they allow texting between teachers and students, and whether or not that actually is allowed to take place, it certainly should be something addressed by the school and their policy. Then we have, Your Honor, Bradley Nord, well aware of the school policy, but ignoring it. And I think then I'm making an end run around it. They have a policy, they do the best they can to enforce it, but the teachers thwarting the school district. But I've alleged that they don't have those policies and procedures in place to keep any students.
Don't all of your puzzle chains, if you will, get us to the point where at some point you have to say, and this breach, if there was one, proximately caused the activity between the teacher and the student. Don't we have to get there at some point? And
yes.
If we do, doesn't that show the end run?
No, Your Honor. I think that the breach here is a foreseeable consequence of the failure to have those policies. But I could just as easily be saying that the teacher intentionally provided alcohol, that the teacher intentionally left the premises with the student in a car and they were injured, that the teacher was proselytizing to join a cult. There's all kinds of behavior, intentional behavior, that can come out of not having policies or procedures in place for student-teacher contact, student-teacher alone time, student-teacher classroom secrecy.
And to conclude that argument, at least some of those would not be a battery.
Absolutely correct. A car wreck would not be a battery, would not be an assault. If the teacher left with a student and they were in a car wreck, or if the teacher gave the underage student alcohol.
In this case, is this a battery?
That, Judge, I have troubled over this, but I'm going to tell you what I think this is more akin to is our debauching a minor statute. I don't think it's a battery.
Thank you very much.
Yes, we ask the court to return this matter to the trial court level for discovery and reinstate the case. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any time for rebuttal?
There's no time for rebuttal. The next case.